Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, the captain of this vessel. And today with me, as usual, is Ensign David Sabal. Hello.
I'm ready for command, Captain.
You're ready for command? You're an ensign. Be patient. You'll get there soon enough.
You mean to tell me I'm like Wesley Crusher?
Yeah, go ahead and put this red shirt on.
Oh.
Just don't read into it. Just put the red shirt on and then go in that turbo lift.
Why is it getting hot in there?
Yeah. All right. So today we have a fun discussion planned. We're going to be talking about and breaking down and reviewing Star Trek Picard Countdown Number 1. You've seen the trailer. Now witness the events leading to CBS All Access's Picard. Before he retired to his vineyard, Jean-Luc Picard was the most decorated admiral in Starfleet. Then one mission changed his life forever. The countdown starts here. All right, so in this issue, this tie-in issue here, we witnessed the events that will lead into the new CBS All Access series, Picard, one of the most anticipated events of 2020. Easily, right, David?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is essentially a really important moment for a lot of Star Trek fans. This is a return to form. This is what we've all been wanting to see, a familiar face.
A little hesitation as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are nervous, hoping they get it right.
And it's understandable, too. I understand especially a lot of my friends who I've talked off air about the upcoming Picard series. Where we got left off was a perfect ending. You know, the end of Star Trek,
an
the
ending next of generation, a chapter.
It was
ending
of a chapter. But it was a perfect ending.
Oh, and absolutely.
You're like left going, well, what else do you need? What else is there for Jean-Luc?
Well, hold on here, because we had the amazing wrap up that was the All Good Things.
Yes.
The TNG season finale, and you can easily say, well, where do they go from there? I mean, this was such a great conclusion.
It was a great conclusion.
Here we were given various TNG era films that also led us into new areas of Picard's life and his legacy. And I felt like Nemesis had a lot of issues. There were problems, but for the most part, it did give us a nice little finale feeling, like everything will be okay.
Yeah, it gave us an interesting concept into the next chapter of Jean-Luc's life.
Right. Everyone was put into position, and I feel like a lot of us TNG fans could walk away from that movie knowing where everybody would end up for the most part. And that's where this film just makes all, or this TV series makes a lot of people nervous, because we all have our expectations. And I'm okay with my expectations being destroyed. You know, like, there are going to be things that I expect to happen. That's just how it is as a Star Trek fan. But if those things are not met, but they're bringing something very different and just as, let's say, even more unique, and it feels right, it feels true to Star Trek and Captain Picard or Picard, you know what? I'm open to new interpretations as long as the story is focused, as long as it's well written, and I feel like they have thought out this story.
Yeah, it has to matter to the characters involved, the main players. Mm-hmm. You know, if this were to be like, in regards to Picard, if this was actually going to be like a throwaway story for Jean-Luc's life.
And we know it's not.
It would be a disaster.
Yeah, and we know it's not. Even Patrick Stewart, I mean, the man has so much respect for Star Trek.
He's very protective of this character.
He is, absolutely. He has said it in various interviews. It's the reason why he has turned down other offers. I mean, don't think for a second, Picard was the first time a Star Trek producer said, hey, Patrick Stewart, let's have a meeting.
And Patrick Stewart probably said, nope.
Yes, there has been various times where I'm sure they have tried to get him back on board. As we know, he was allegedly going to be a part of the 2009 Kelvin timeline reboot. He was going to be a part of that, and allegedly, and he had passed. And there was other things as well rumored. So for him to come back, it's not because he needs a paycheck. It's not because he needs the the relevance. The guy has – his career has taken leaps since the ending of TNG. The guy is no longer known as just Captain Picard. He's a geek icon. He's an acting icon. So him coming back makes me feel like, well, he saw something in that script.
Yeah.
He saw something in that concept that spoke to him as an actor. And that's why I feel confident about this upcoming series. Now, let's get into the comic book written by Star Trek Picard co-creator and supervising producer Kirsten Beyer and fan favorite Mike Johnson. Now, as I said, Dave, there's a lot of anticipation for this upcoming series. Will it live up to the legacy of TNG? Will Picard's ongoing contemporary story live up to our expectations as TNG fans? There's a lot riding on this series, as we had just said. Will this be the series to catapult Trek back into the mainstream? Discovery has done wonders, but there's a fringe element to it. Many old school Trek fans have turned their back on that series for a plethora of reasons, and we're not going to get into them. We've already discussed them, and I don't want this to be a negative show. I, for one, you and I both, Dave, are fans of Star Trek Discovery. We had our issues.
Absolutely.
We had our issues with the ending, the second half of the first season. But for the most part, we reviewed the first season favorably.
Yeah.
So bringing this series to CBS All Access, Picard, and Amazon Prime for the rest of the world is a big move.
It's
a very big move.
It's a bold move. It's a very bold move, especially with the current landscape with how the streaming services are now that there's, Disney Plus, there's HBO Max, and they're coming out with their heavy hitting series and trying to, take a piece of that pie. It's now up to, CBS All Access and Amazon to really, really set the tone and kind of not get overlooked.
CBS was already doing pretty well with their streaming service. Yes, their subscriber base pales in comparison to, the big three, Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, and now Disney Plus, but they were doing just fine.
Yeah.
Especially with Star Trek Discovery being on their platform, but this is going to be a game changer. So there's a lot of expectations, not just on story and where they take the bigger story of Star Trek, but technology wise and network wise, what is this going to do for CBS All Access? And in my opinion, this is going to put CBS All Access officially on the map for streaming services.
I do think so too, because this arguably will be their franchise flagship,
right?
Flagship franchise,
right?
Is Star Trek. I mean, when you look at how well they've, I don't think the right term is market, but like organized the franchise up to this point.
They have a strategy.
They have a strategy.
Which can't be said about other studios and production houses that own franchises. Sometimes it's like, hey, let's throw wet paper or spitballs at the wall and see what sticks. CBS All Access, they have an actual plan of action. They have a complete strategy on how they're rolling these out and how one series will lead to the next. And they created an entire subdivision within CBS All Access specifically now, as of 6 months ago, to specifically take control of the Star Trek property.
Yeah. And like every single property that they've released has bled into the other to kind of help and show to the audience that, hey, everything we do for this franchise matters, even down to like, say, the short treks. I mean, we all agree that basically Discovery is their flagship when it comes to Star Trek. However, the one thing that they've been doing, which is unique in regards to products and stuff and how they treat the franchise, is bringing in the whole Short Trek idea and using that to kind of launch other areas of interest for them and try to carry on the audience and make the audience feel that, hey, everything you're seeing right now matters. We care.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing, is they care about the franchise.
Yeah. And there's going to be some things that are going to piss people off, but that's going to be a given.
That's a given.
Whenever you're trying to be innovative and you're trying to make something work for a new generation, there's going to be some people complaining. But
oh yeah. Because like fans, just as a fan, you always imagine your way of how the world should go.
Right.
And everyone's going to get upset when, unfortunately, the story doesn't go that way.
Yeah. And bringing it back to Picard specifically, up to this point, it looks like Picard could be that viable hit. We can base some of that assumption on the fact that this very comic book that we're going to get into today was sold out at several local comic shops here in town.
Yeah.
We couldn't find a physical copy. So that being said, the question for me was, pertaining to Picard, this new era of Picard, will this comic, specifically this comic book, will this comic live up to the hype of Picard? Will it be worth the $4.99? Not a cheap comic book. I mean, it's not going to break the bank, but it's also $5 a pop. You're looking at $15 total for the entire series, because it is a three-part series. And I will say this. This is what I'll say. This is a very there is a very interesting story brewing.
Yes, that's the thing, is like, it's not like one of those, like in all the big comic book companies, they always have, when it, in regards to movies or TVs, they always have those tie-in comics.
Right. And they sometimes they're just
majority
shitty.
Of them are always panned. Like, it doesn't matter. You can skip it. With Star Trek, though, it's a little different. When they do their tie-ins, I mean, even back then when the
reboot. Not all the time, Dave.
Not all the time.
We have our problems with IDW.
We do. But recently, in recent history, when you look at like the Star Trek comics, say like going back to the JJ, when they relaunched Star Trek, right? They did those tie-ins to the countdown thing.
See, I would disagree with that. Meaning, I agree with you, the countdown's good. But yeah. I think, let's reframe that thought, because I think what you're trying to say is that, no, you know, I'm not going to speak for you. I'll speak for myself, Dave. I feel like the old school comic books, when they were on Marvel and DC, were fun. They weren't deep, yes, but they were fun. I didn't have problems with them. IDW puts out a lot of Star Trek content, and I'm happy with it because it gives us something to look at when we didn't have Star Trek during the last 10 or so years. But it's hit or miss.
Hit or miss.
There is no MB. What I've noticed is there's no average stories. They either are really bad.
Yes.
Or they're really good. And I would throw Countdown into that equation. Countdown is a good, very good comic book. And, of course, you're talking about the 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot tie-in comic, which, by the way, it isn't a coincidence that this is called Picard Countdown. And the 2009 reboot, which is also connected to the events that Picard is connected to, is also called Countdown. And we're going to get into that. As I said, very interesting story that's brewing. They are setting the groundwork in such a way that you can see where it's leading and what it will be using to form the bridge or the chronological gap between the final TNG movie, Nemesis, the Kelvin timeline Star Trek film, J.J. Abrams' 2009 reboot, that was released, and the upcoming Picard series. There's no doubt all three will work together.
Yes.
If they don't, first off, in the comic book, you can already see it all working.
Uh-huh.
If they don't, that's a huge fucking failure right there.
It
would blow me away that they would choose not to connect these, because as we know, everything in Star Trek is canon. Everything in Star Trek is connected. And I know there's been arguments where people say, well, Kelvin isn't in the same timeline, so it doesn't factor in. I'm like, you're right. Kelvin timeline doesn't factor in as of now. From the moment the Narada went into time, and destroyed the USS Kelvin, that's when the timeline split. But the events leading up to that moment, Romulus exploding, Spock working, you know, trying to save Romulus from his end, all that happened. And in the prime timeline, guess what happened? Spock just disappeared. He went through a wormhole, and we don't know anything about him in this timeline.
That's the last time you see of him.
Right. So, David, without going too deep into this as of immediately, because we are going to get really Star Trek nerdy here, we're going to get into the ins and outs because this comic book just took us there.
There was a lot of great things here.
Yeah, give me your initial thoughts.
My initial thoughts with this one was, as funny as it sounds, going into this, I had actually high expectations for this title. Just because...
I think you kind of have to, huh?
Yeah, because, you know... The last time I had a countdown Star Trek type of comic, it did really well, and it set a standard that I'm like going, I like the storyline that they're trying to give here, and it kind of gave this interesting idea of what the future of Star Trek would become, and I wanted them to continue it. And then now you get to this, and especially when you take into account that it's been like, when was the J.J. Abrams reboot? 2009?
Yeah.
So it's been 10 years. This is a story that has been needed to continue for 10 years, an explanation. And my expectations for this was like, I was really excited to see where they were going to go with the comic. And I'll be honest, reading it, I wasn't let down by anything because I now get an even further in-depth feel of what the universe was like prior to the Kelvin incident, which is actually freaking cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave, I agree with you. And let's just make this a formal statement here. We understand that this is not canon, that this comic book is not canon. And even though that it's not canon, Dave, the fact that Kristen Bayer is the supervising writer and the big boss of all Star Trek tie-in media. Yes, Dave, it gives it weight. It brings legitimacy to this comic series. For one, even though we know that season two can come in of Picard, let's say season two of Picard can come in and kick all of this down and make none of it matter. We know that Kristen is usually in the know about story development. So as of now, we can read this and take comfort in knowing that we can glean relevant pieces of narrative that will no doubt connect to the different Star Trek properties and the upcoming Picard series.
Yeah.
Number one, we all know what Nemesis had said about the Romulans. Let's go through this.
That's the first step.
It was an empire that was essentially on the verge of collapse. That's the reason why Shinzon was able to pretty much annihilate the Senate and take control.
Because of their infighting.
Right.
That was it. That the way the Romulans, and unfortunately at how their culture was, it was a culture doomed for failure.
Yeah, it was a complete just collapse of power. Yeah. And
it's the fall of the Roman Empire when you take a look at it.
Yes, absolutely. And number two, we know that the events that were the catalyst for the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot is canon. We know that it is. And it was directly connected with the issues plaguing Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
The same issues that Kurtzman revealed in a recent interview that Picard's life was radically changed by. So the events of J.J. Abrams' 2009 reboot that created this whole cluster of timelines directly changed Picard's life forever.
Yes.
The destruction of Romulus, as it was depicted in Star Trek's 2009, will play a part in Picard's life moving forward. That much we know. And that's why, Dave, I am so fucking excited for the Picard series, because how long now? I mean, for me as a Trek fan, this is what I've been wanting for years.
Yeah.
I want the two properties to acknowledge each other just like they always had in the past. There was no difference between TV and movies. It was all one big continuation of story.
One big happy family.
Yeah. And of course, with the separation between the two companies, CBS, you know, Viacom, that created a lot of problems, and they split the properties. One had the movie rights, the other had the TV rights. But now CBS and Viacom, Paramount, have merged again as of 6 months ago. And now they have specifically said that as a two companies, as a joint company, they are putting 100% of their focus into Star Trek and uniting the two properties. And let us remember that Kurtzman is J.J. Abrams' protege. And he was directly involved in the story development of the 2009 reboot. Uh-huh. And Kurtzman is what? He's the lord of the Star Trek universe as of right now. He's the one calling all the shots when it comes to story. So we are going to see some heavy connections between these three different properties. I mean, this comic book takes place in 2386. That's when the very opening page, it states 2386. And the events that jumpstart the reboot Trek films take place in 2397.
Yes.
So it's all connected.
It's getting closer and closer together continuity-wise so that we can actually fill in the gaps. And that's the biggest – I think that's the biggest goal.
I'm sorry, right? 2387, not 2397.
2387, yeah. But I think that's the biggest goal with the strategy of Kurtzman and everyone running Star Trek right now is to – okay, for 10 years, we've had this gigantic gap between everything. We now have to fill
10 years. Yep.
We have to fill it up. We have to basically connect everything. Okay, let's take everything that was last said in the last series of the Star Trek films, like Nemesis, connect it to what happened in 2009. Even like with their TV
They're
going
to have to mention Spock, right?
They're going to have to.
How do you...
And it's very – when you think about it, it's relatively easy to explain.
Especially because Spock's direct involvement – and we went into this on several Patreon discussions. If you guys want to find those, just head over to patreon.com/Rain Man Digital and pledge $5 or more a month and gain access to all those shows, our library of Star Trek discussions. But, I mean, we have gone into how Spock ties into all this besides the obvious, besides the 2009 reboot.
Yes.
I mean, his storyline in TNG was directly connected to Romulus. That's why it made sense for him to be a part of the 2009 movie and the destruction of Romulus.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, it's very easy to connect Spock to the current Picard series, too, because from Picard's side, all they saw, all those people from the TNG side who witnessed the destruction of Romulus, all they know is Spock and the Narada were sucked into a black hole.
Yeah.
Meaning they were, to them, destroyed.
Yeah.
They got sucked into a black hole. They got obliterated.
I mean, honestly, if they just address that, I would be happy.
I'd be happy.
There's the connection.
That's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, because we don't need to – it would be too convoluted if we go, well, what happened? We don't know. Let's investigate. We don't need all that. The Star Trek fan who's watching this show will know immediately what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yes, I do remember that from the 2009 reboot.
And then, like, it was funny because I had a conversation with a friend of mine who said that, well, Picard would have gone after Spock because of that connection.
No one knew what happened.
No one knew what have happened because, like, probably to Picard, Spock just died. Because he was in the center of Romulus getting blown up and turned into a black hole.
And guess what? He couldn't time travel.
Yeah, he's not going to time travel.
Let's say he did. Let's say Picard said, you know what? I know what happened. He went back in time. Okay, let me go back in time. Go ahead, Picard. You'll never find him because you're going to go back in time to your version of time.
Exactly.
Just because you travel in time doesn't mean you're going to reach the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah. And that's something that that Picard would know from past TNG episodes.
Well, even Sulu knew he had to go around the sun.
You got to go around the sun. And then which sun?
Any sun will do. All right. So now bringing it back to this comic book, we can see exactly how all this will lead to the series, setting aside the heavily implied canon aspects. We get a story in this first issue that is 100% Star Trek.
Yeah, it is.
Picard, who is now an admiral aboard another vessel, has been tasked with the relocation of the Romulan population. who has begrudgingly asked for assistance. The way the Romulans are portrayed is so spot on as well. A species on the verge of extinction, and yet they can't see past their own prejudice or obsessive conspiratory ideological way of running their government. The fact that they're keeping secrets from their allies, the very people that's going to help them save themselves, and yet they don't fully trust them. They feel like they're being spied on, that this is just a way for them to be spied on. And I like that because it all fits into the relationship that Starfleet or the United Federation of Planets has always had with the Romulan Empire. You got to remember, there was, what, the 22nd century was the Human Federation War?
Yeah, the Human Federation War with,
I believe, the 22nd century. I mean, that's the reason why in the original series, it's a big deal when Romulans surface. Like, oh, we haven't seen them in years.
In years.
You know, after the war was over, they all basically just went right back into their territory and never, ever came out. They essentially became North Korea.
Essentially, yeah.
They locked down all borders. No one can come in or go out. So the Romulans, this entire scenario that they're using to build this comic book story up, very much is on par with what we know of Romulans and how they interact with each other and interact with others.
Others, yes.
And I've always said, Dave, I've said it on this show, I've always said the Romulans were a missed opportunity in Trek. I don't know how many times I've said this. We never really explored them as deep as we could have. And because of that, we don't know a whole lot about them. Honestly, we really don't.
I think you're right, because looking back at it, we've gotten more substance from the Cardassians, who is a very which is a very, you know, short-lived species introduced into Star Trek. But the Romulans were
relatively new in the grand scope. Yeah.
Of Star Trek, they were relatively new, and the Romulans were introduced way back in like TOS.
Yeah,
and they're still a race that is complete in secrecy. You know, like down to the fact that they look like Vulcans.
Well,
how it first started.
Well, I believe they're relatives of Vulcans. That's why I've said years – I haven't said it recently, but years ago, I used to always talk to my Star Trek friends. I'd say, you know what? We keep putting Star Trek on Federation ships. That's always what we do. Yes, Deep Space Nine did a space station, but it was still a Federation crew. Why are we so opposed to exploring the world of Star Trek through the eyes of a different species on board a completely different ship? Talk about being able to explore the ideology of others and perhaps their perspective on Starfleet and the United Federation of Planets. And I had said the go-to alien species for me was the Romulans.
Yeah.
Like, what if we did a Romulan series, a Cold War type of series pertaining to the Romulan Empire? I mean, the sky's the limit with a series like that.
It makes me wonder if that was the game plan for Discovery, because remember a long time ago when we first covered Discovery, one of the biggest selling points and story points was the focus on the Klingons at that point. You know, you had those moments in the very first episodes of Discovery where, oh, you have the scenes with the Klingons talking amongst themselves in their own language on their own ship.
Right.
And we get to see their culture. And it was almost kind of like, This was a precursor or kind of like a appetizer to what we could get if we did a series outside of the Federation. And you're right. I mean, a Romulan story, especially like right now, would be so cool, because you could have like almost kind of like a espionage Cold War type of vibe, because that's what the Romulans were. They didn't trust anybody. I mean, even their allies, they never really trusted. And going back to this comic, it really hit home to me that I'm like going, man, I never realized out of all the alien races, the Romulans are probably the hardest ones to actually make an ally. If you think about it, Klingons are easy.
Well, because they're their own worst enemy.
They're their own
the
worst enemy.
The Romulans don't trust.
They don't trust.
Even the Cardassians, even though they were like an insecure, like significant other that needed to be coddled. I'm like, oh, listen, we like you. We're not going to be mean to you. We had to caress them in order for Cardassia to trust us. But eventually it happened.
Yeah.
Especially in Deep Space Nine with the so many amazing layers of that development and their relationship and what they ultimately became by the time we got to the end of Deep Space Nine. But the Romulans have never, ever really truly grabbed that olive branch. Yes, we had that moment in Deep Space Nine. We had the coalition or the affiliate. What was it called when they were fighting against the Founders, the whole Dominion War? We united with them, but they still had so many rules. They were still holding us at arm's length. Even when they gave the Defiant a cloaking device, if you remember, they had so many rules and stipulations. You can't use it in this space. You had to use it on the other side of the wormhole. Universe. Yeah, of the wormhole. So, I don't know, Dave. Like I said, I'm glad. And I think I'm hoping the Picard series does delve into the intricacies of the Romulan Empire a bit more, especially post, destruction of Romulus. I mean, back before the 2009 reboot was a thing, after Star Trek Nemesis proved to be a financial failure and Star Trek Enterprise was canceled, the executive producers led by Frank Berman had originally started to develop a new film idea to hopefully they were thinking they could jumpstart Star Trek again. And they were going to go with a series called Star Trek: The Beginning, which was set during the 22nd century Earth-Romulan War. Now, yes, that sounds appealing, but at the same time, and ultimately it got shelved for J.J. Abrams' 2009 film. But yes, it sounds cool, but in a lot of ways, I'm glad that got shelved because I'm just kind of burnt out on going in the past. Like, let's move forward.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm excited for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, because we're moving forward. That's why I'm excited about Picard, because we're moving forward. So there's a lot of good things. Yes, the Romulans are a thing that is a bit of a mystery. And I think in the end, because we haven't really delved into them very much, it has made a very unique angle here for the Picard series to dabble a little bit. And same thing with the comic book, of course. And that's something Mike Johnson, the writer of this comic book, exploited and used to write this story. The idea that we don't know much about the Romulans was used as a way to expand on their secret antics. And this leads to the big dilemma of issue number one. As we learned in Nemesis, there are more species within the Romulan Empire than just Romulans. For example, the Remans that Shinzon had become the leader of. In this issue, we are introduced to another species that resides within the Romulan Empire, and they are considered primitives, according to their words. And the Romulans want them left behind, as they will not have the resources, nor do they consider them worthy of saving. Needless to say, this does not go over well with Picard, and that's essentially where issue one ends. That's the setup right there, because I don't think I need to voice the moral implications that presents for someone like Admiral Picard. You know, someone who's there, who has dedicated his entire life to the Federation to honor and respect all life.
All life. It doesn't matter what it is, what type of life, all life. Anything that is considered sentient has a purpose. And that's been like the core moral value to Picard as a character throughout his entire history, is to show that down deep inside, Picard as a human cares a lot.
A human. If you're a Ferengi.
Yeah. Cares just as much for other species as the humans.
Right. Yeah. So that creates the little obstacle for this series. Whether or not this will be the ongoing issue remains to be seen. However, I would be okay with that, because I feel like that's something that you can't just breeze past. You're dealing with how many inhabitants were there on that planet?
There's
four to 5 million.
5 million, but he was only allowed to save 15,000?
No, I think it was 4,000 to 5,000. I think four to 5,000. I believe that's what the Romulans had told them would be the number that they would have to.
10,000.
Oh, 10,000 yeah, we to relocate.
To, yeah, 10,000 to relocate, not 5 million. And like the best part by far is like getting that gauge of how the Romulans see other races really adds to the layers that you alluded to. Is like, we don't know how the Romulans ever looked at other races quite as much as we did in the later years of Star Trek, like in Nemesis, especially how they treat the Remans. How they treated the Remans. I remember that, and I was like going, they're just treating them like slave mines.
Right.
But the Remans are like going, yeah, this is our life. This is how we live, and this is so good. It makes us stronger. And it's like, okay.
Wait, you're talking about in Nemesis?
In Nemesis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How mm-hmm. how Shinzon like told the story of how he grew up.
Oh, Shinzon.
And then like he doesn't look at it as a tragedy. He looks at it as, this is what made me strong. And because remember, that's what Shinzon was saying to Picard. I'm stronger than you because this is how I grew up. You don't get it because you're naive and you're seeing this as the Federation way. And
man, I hope they bring all this up.
I hope they bring this up because it was such good storytelling.
In the comic book and the TV series, don't run away from it because Nemesis wasn't reviewed favorably by a lot of fans. Please do not do one of those maneuvers where you just forget it happened. Shinzon was such a major part of Star Trek, or I should say of Picard's development as a character. And it's where we left his character off. You know, well, it's the last time we saw him, and it that event also had changed him. The fact that they designed that film for him to essentially look at himself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, poetic, Shakespearean as hell. So they cannot run from that. There are a lot of good or great elements that were involved in that film.
I don't think they'd run away from it because of how Nemesis did box office wise. I honestly feel that they would run away from it because it's a subject that would make the audience uncomfortable.
Because
if you think about it, that's what a lot of people criticize Nemesis for. Nemesis was too dark. It showed the Federation in a bad light. And a lot of fans, because me and you talked about this, a lot of Star Trek Federation fans have rose-tinted glasses. They don't understand that basically there's a world outside of the Federation, and the Federation had to do things to get to that point.
Yeah, and that's one thing that was missing from the comic book, and I know it's just the first issue, so it's not a deal breaker, but I'm hoping the comic book does get into that aspect as well as the TV show coming up. They deal with the fall or the decline of the Federation, because number one, that was the last we heard of the Federation in Nemesis. It was the fact that they were a declining power. Same thing in Insurrection, because the Dominion War and the Borg attacks, they were declining. They were no longer the superpower that they were. So I would like to see what happened over that 20-year time span. You know, what happened to the Federation? Did they grow in numbers again? Were they able to strengthen and refortify the Alliance? You know, it'd be interesting to see that as well. But I think what I dig the most is that the comic book feels very on par, Dave, with the rumored original script for the 2009 JJ Trek reboot. And maybe this is where they'll tell the story in this comic book as well as the TV series. Maybe this is where we'll see it finally made officially canon in the TV series.
It'd be really good.
And that's, of course, the rumored script, Dave, is what they were able to use for Star Trek Countdown, the 2009 tie-in comic book for JJ Abrams' reboot. Yeah. Franchise or reboot Trek. Originally, parts of Countdown was supposed to be at the beginning of Trek. There were supposed to be scenes with Geordi and Picard and Spock all working together.
And Nero. Because remember, Nero played a big role in Countdown. And it's what happens in Countdown explains why Nero hates Spock so much.
Right. So I'm hoping maybe this is their chance to officially take all that and make it canon, because the Spock element is canon. Yes. But the Picard and Geordi element is not canon yet.
No, not yet.
So it'll be nice to see if they include that. And obviously, guess who's involved in this first issue? Geordi.
Geordi.
I'm like, okay, well, all roads seem to be leading in that direction, Dave.
It does. And I actually, my biggest like was the fact that the first character, recognizable character you get is Geordi. Because Geordi is that one bridge. If you grew up watching TNG, Geordi is kind of like that one person that we all gravitated towards that would tell almost the story between Picard and Data. If Picard and Data were talking, Geordi was there to kind of be our eyes and kind of be the eyes and ears of the audience. And I like the fact that in the very beginning, you don't start with Picard. No, you start with Geordi. Because it's almost kind of like, for me, that narrative cue that we're going to hear the story of what happened to Picard through someone like Geordi.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Dave, I enjoyed this issue. What were your final? You want to give me your final thoughts and your RMD score?
My final thoughts and my final RMD score on this one. I was really surprised and very, very happy with this story. It's a really great setup to something big. You get that sense that, okay, we get to see the cracks in Picard, this character that's been so stoic and basically so, you know, we don't want to see him fall. We never want to see Jean-Luc fall, but when he does, it matters, you know, whether it's his fall during his storyline with Locutus, the storyline between him and Shinzon and Nemesis, all those stories were so character developing for Jean-Luc that this comic really sets that up. I love the final page. That final page was just awesome because it speaks volumes to what's to come for this character. Just simply him sitting there and basically saying, I am a fool. So trusting in the redemption of an old enemy and my own abilities and my own righteousness of my cause. And that's when you start seeing those cracks in his character saying, I'm naive. Shinzon's right. Yeah. So my final score for this, I give this a solid 85 for a tie-in media, which is relatively high for a tie-in media comic, because as I've alluded to, tie-in media comics usually are not good. Majority of the time you're going to be looking at going nothing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter too much. This one, you get a sense that with Kristen Beyer and the writing team for the comic, they want to make sure that whoever is picking this up, they know it's a Star Trek fan and they know that they have to make it matter to the upcoming Picard series.
Right. All right. I will give this an 84. I feel like it was a good start. Lots to work with. The fact that they managed to kind of fill in the gaps fairly quickly in about, 20-some pages. There was no wasting of pages, which is my biggest problem with comic books these days. I feel like, hey, it's 24 pages or 23 pages, but we actually only get like 16 pages because they either overuse a page with a bunch of like just pictures and images and there's no story, or there's tons of ads and it just takes up the entire comic book. I'm like, well, I just spent $5 for this son of a bitch and I'm getting ads instead of story. So I definitely dig the story. I think it's a good start. It has made me even that much more excited for the Picard series coming up, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how they conclude this, and we will cover it on Patreon. We'll continue covering issue number 2 and 3 as a Patreon exclusive. So if you're interested in getting those, just head over to patreon.com/Rainman Digital and pledge to our podcast here. $5 or more a month and you'll gain access to all of those goodies. So Dave, this concludes our discussion. Right. Yes. And I want to thank everyone for listening to Star Trek From the Holodeck. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Let's live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.